Today on Abounding Grace, Pastor Chris Gordon gives us a look at God handling our problems. The battle belongs to the Lord. Here's Pastor Chris.
The entirety of their deliverance all the way through from beginning to end is His work. It's His battle. It's His fight. It's His salvation. Salvation belongs to the Lord. He is that committed. He wanted them to stand back and say, whoa, the Lord is that committed to complete this work.
He is committed to you and I, and that is what comes out loud and clear in today's message. Welcome to Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. We are in Exodus. We're looking at chapters 13 and 14. The battle belongs to the Lord, and we should be grateful it does.
When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the Philistines. Although that was near, for God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. But God led the people around by the way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea. And the people of Israel went up out of the land of Egypt equipped for battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for Joseph had made the sons of Israel solemnly swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones with you from here. And they moved on from Succoth and encamped at Etham on the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. And the Lord said to Moses, tell the people of Israel to turn back and encamp in front of Pi Hahiroth between Migdol and the sea, in front of Baal Zephon. You shall encamp facing it by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the people of Israel, they are wandering in the land, the wilderness has shut them in. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them, and I will get glory over Pharaoh and all the host, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord. And they did so. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, the mind of Pharaoh and his servants was changed toward the people. And they said, what is this we've done that we have let Israel go from serving us? So he made ready his chariot and took his army with him, and took 600 choice chariots and all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the people of Israel while the people of Israel were going out defiantly. The Egyptians pursued them, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them and encamped by the sea, by Pi-Hahiroth, in front of Baal Zephon. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. And Moses said to the people, fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You have only to be silent. May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. The Lord had just told Israel to celebrate and to practice the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the Law of the Firstborn when they entered into the land. In the midst of it, I don't know if you caught it, but in the midst of it, the Lord said numerous times, the ones that I'm thinking about are in verse 5, when the Lord brings you into the land. Verse 11, he says it again. When the Lord brings you into the land, crucial emphasis here, as he swore. To which you say, when did he swear? We'll come back to that. He is presenting this as if it is as good as done. He is going to bring them into the land. And as soon as he had instructed them, we open up the first scene. We begin the wilderness journey, and the whole thing seems to fall apart. I mean, it really seems to fall apart. They turn around and look behind them, and there come the Egyptians marching after them. What were they to do? They can't fight them. This was something Israel did not yet understand, that they were setting off on this journey home, and the Lord wanted something. The Lord was now teaching them something. He had been working all of his splendor and power and might in front of them. But what did he want from them? Well, it shines today that the Lord is calling them. What shines is he is calling them to trust. The scene is a call to faith. The scene is a call to believe his promises. Now as they're heading out, and they're being tested right out of the gates with that. First scene, first act. And as the Lord tests them, the Lord wanted them to understand he's doing this for his own glory. He can't renege on that. That his name is at stake in this. And he wants them to believe that the entirety of their deliverance all the way through from beginning to end is his work. It's his battle. It's his fight. It's his salvation. Salvation belongs to the Lord. He is that committed. He wanted them to stand back and say, whoa, the Lord is that committed to complete this work. Nothing can take that. He is that committed to bring you home. And we see that today as we open up this glorious section of Exodus chapter 13. I said to, I don't know how many people, this is the most exciting passage in Exodus. And everyone said, Pastor, stop saying that. You say that all the time. But it's true. Somebody once asked, what's your favorite passage, the one I'm preaching that week? This one is awesome. And the Lord is showing his power to deliver them by demonstrating his presence with them, his purpose to fulfill what he swore, and that his promise to fight for them the whole way through. The presence, the purpose, and the promise to fight. He has put his name on the line. How could he not do what he said? Let's begin with this encouraging presence of the Lord that the text now emphasizes. Remember back in chapter 3, as the Lord was commissioning and sending Moses over to Egypt to deliver his people, there was that glorious burning bush event. You remember what had happened. Moses had looked at this little desert shrub, and the thing would not be consumed. Fire was in the midst of the bush, and it did not consume the bush. And there we learned that the angel, who is Yahweh, was in the bush. He had appeared to the Lord, to Moses. And there he made a promise to Moses. And all of Moses' struggle and doubt and fear and anxiety, the Lord said, I will certainly, Moses, be with you. And we've heard that so much, but what does that look like? What does that look like? Well, even after the golden calf event, the Lord would come again, and Moses would intercede and would plea, and the Lord would again reassure them that he would be with them. He said that in Exodus 33. My presence will go with you. The threat had been for the presence to be removed. And he said, and I will give you rest. I'm going to do it. Moses understood. He said in Exodus 33 that without your presence, don't even lead us out. We can't handle this for a moment. We can't fight this battle for a moment. It was a distressing thought. Well, as we open up chapter 13, we're seeing the Lord make good again and again, as we've always seen throughout already our study in Genesis and now in Exodus, making good on his word, and he is leading them. His presence is going with them. That's the emphasis here as we open up the first section of Genesis chapter 13. And you'll notice there in verse 17 of chapter 13 that a few things are emphasized. First, about his leading. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. But God led the people around by the way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea. The people had gone up from Egypt. It'll help to remember that whatever insight you're getting here about the leading, they didn't get. The Lord was leading them. They were called to trust. But future generations were to read this and see and learn certain things about the Lord's leading of them so that we would remember these things. And as 2 Timothy says, it's profitable for us. He's leading them. But he wants us to see something. The Spirit wanted us to see something. We're told that the Lord did not take, this is a huge principle in Scripture, according to our wisdom, he did not take the most expedient and the quickest route. Didn't do it. The most efficient way, the best way, would have been to head north along what we know as the Via Maris, meaning the way of the sea. In fact, it's been observed that had Israel gone that way, it would probably take in a few weeks instead of 40 years to get there. What's God doing? What is he doing? There's an interesting phrase. At the end of verse 18, I never caught it before. And the people of Israel went up out of the land of Egypt equipped for battle, ready to fight. Word means they have lined up in ranks. I had to stop and ponder that for a moment. I mean, that's an interesting phrase because they went in ranks, they lined up for war. They're not warriors. They have never fought a battle in their life. They had a lot of weapons handed to them by the Egyptians, didn't they, when they plundered? They had a lot of swords all of a sudden in their hand. They had a lot of plunder in their hand. They had Egypt's best fighting stuff. They had plundered that nation. And here they are marching out, and you could imagine the victory marches. You could imagine the chants. They've lined up in ranks. The swords are out. We're taking this by storm. Slaves for 400 years, these guys have been. Who do they think they are, right? And the imagery you have is when they left, they had plundered, and they are armed. They are the bad boys now heading into the land. They're tough. What's the Lord's concern? They didn't hear. Well, if he had taken them into a situation like that, they can't handle this for a second. And if he takes them by the way of the Philistines and they see those swords, you know what they're going to do? They're going to bolt back to Egypt. They're going to run back. It's too much for them. Can't handle it. So what does he do? Well, I was curious at this moment what other commentators said, and Calvin called this an amazing act of God's condescension and mercy to his people. We go through this life and we don't see why we're turned this way and that way. We don't see why we're going this way or that way. Some of us take turns. We have no idea why. And the Lord is telling us that he gives strange reroutes often, but not for the reason you think. This is where I think the commentators fell short. Not for the reasons you think, not to make your life easier. I want to come back to that question, why is God rerouting? Before that's explained, two other things are emphasized as they're heading out. The first is, you'll notice this strange occurrence that the body of Joseph was picked up as they had headed out of Egypt. You'll read in verse 19, and Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had placed the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry my bones from here with you. You know the Egyptians and Joseph would have sat in the tomb of the kings in some way there in Egypt. They would have walked in there and plundered and taken back the body of Joseph, and the Egyptians were great for their embalming, you remember. I don't think we understand how significant this was. When Joseph died years ago, you remember what happened. The children were brought to him, and he gathered them all around the bed, and he never wanted them. It was prophetic. He wanted them to understand God's promise and wanted his body to be kept there. Remember, they drove Jacob's body back. Joseph said, not mine. Mine stays. And here's why I want it to stay. So God, he wanted them never to forget the promise made to Joseph that his body had to go back and be buried with the fathers because it would be raised one day. That body was to be a kind of token. That body was to be, as people would have been carrying it through the wilderness all those years, an abiding testimony of God's faithfulness to his promises to Joseph himself, great Joseph himself, the most Christ-like figure in the Old Testament, that he would bring them to the land. There goes a body. If they didn't make it, God would have failed. and what he swore to Abraham. Then something absolutely glorious happens. That body was an encouragement. Then something glorious happens. God's presence comes down. Verse 21. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light. So as to go by day and night, he did not take the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. An awesome thing happened at that moment. A massive pillar of cloud came down and led them by day, and then another kind of pillar by fire, by night. And I don't know what the Israelites thought when they saw that, but God had continued to emphasize in this whole thing, I'm fulfilling what I swore to Abraham. And I got to go back there. What did God say to Abraham in Genesis 15? Listen to this. And it came to pass, when the sun went down and it was dark, that behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch that passed between those pieces. On the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, to your descendants, I have given this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. Where was Abraham? Asleep. Silent. I want you to remember that. We're going to close out the sermon with that thought. God came through in two sort of the legs of God. It was a glorious two column they call theophany of his presence. These two glorious blazing symbols of God's presence came down and passed through the row, split through the row, and God was telling Abraham, I will fulfill this covenant of grace to you. I have to. God was taking an oath, walking through, promise an oath through those pieces to fulfill what he promised. Here we are. God's about to split the sea and walk right through again. The whole scene is being reenacted. It's a death-like event. His presence is going. His covenant of grace is being shown that he is intending to fulfill. But the Lord wanted them to think about the fact that he was with them through the whole thing. Whatever was about to come to pass, he's with them, he's guiding them, he's fulfilling everything that he promised, he's guiding, he's assuring, he's passing through, he's leading them down the safe path so that the judgment won't touch one of them. Abraham, 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 I swore, I swore, I swore, drives this. The Shekinah glory shows up. The glory is there leading them. The Lord has displayed before the journey even begins his presence, fulfilling what he promised to Abraham, what he promised to Moses, I'll go with you. Joseph's body is there. I've got to bring my servant back. It's got to happen. Okay, that sets up everything. When you come to verse chapter 14, now we see this purpose unfolding. His presence is revealed. His purpose is now unfolding. Israel's going up for battle. He has rerouted them. All of a sudden, God does something now completely unexpected. Look at verse 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Pi Hahiroth between Migdol and the sea. Opposite Baal Zephon, you shall encamp before it by the sea. Let me put this together, everything that's happened. They had traveled from Ramses to Succoth. The Lord on that path says, no. I'm not taking them that way. They're going to see the Philistines. They're going to see war. They will run back to Egypt. We're not going to go that way. So he stops and he reroutes them to go south by the way of the wilderness by the Red Sea. But now, the wilderness, you'll notice. But now in chapter 14, in verse 2, he turns them around and sends them back north to camp between Migdol, which was this mighty Egyptian fortress and tower, and the sea. Notice the Canaanite god is mentioned there, Baal Zephon. Put this together. God would not send them one way because they can't handle it. even though they're all equipped for battle. He takes them back. And then what does he do? A different route. And then he runs them back north. It's a giant kind of circle here. Does that sound safe? Nothing about this makes sense. They don't know this. Remember, you got 2 million people running. This can't be comfortable. Complete vulnerability, he just put them in a situation. If you're a military commander, you did the absolute worst thing you could do. I mean, it's worse than Custer's last stand. This is the worst thing. This is the bad choice. You are not leading your people right. You just placed your whole army, who has no ability to fight, in a position now they can't get out of. They can't run. He's backed them up against the Red Sea. Now remember, he said, they see the Philistines, they'll run. They're sheep for the slaughter. They are sheep for the slaughter. Why? Well, Pharaoh hears about this. It gets back into the courts that there are 2 million people of Israel mulling around, and the Pharaoh's officials are saying, these guys are idiots. Look at them out there. They can't even head out into the wilderness. They don't even know what they're doing. These Israelites are mulling around everywhere. They've gone up. They've gone back. They've gone over. They are confused. They're scared. They don't even know what to do. What just happened? Lord had just baited and hooked, didn't he? Now, it reminds you, Israel doesn't know this. You think they're starting to get a little frustrated? This makes no sense. this makes no sense. Verse 3, you get to the Lord's intentions. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they're bewildered by the land. The wilderness has closed them in. Then I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them, and I will gain honor over Pharaoh and all his army, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord.
It's almost as if the Lord is getting ahead of himself, referring to the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians. Paul, when you're weak, I'm strong. Let me be strong. We'll take a look at tomorrow's program with Pastor Chris in just a moment. Closing out our time together today, we would remind you that copies are available to listen to at any time on our website, agradio.org. Or if you wish to obtain a copy on CD or maybe a thumb drive, reach out to us, 888-504-8805. Or stop by our website, agradio.org, and drop us an email. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. If you have an interest in redirecting some of your financial resources to Abounding Grace Radio, as we are listener-supported, we'd like to say thank you for a gift of $15 or more with a thumb drive that contains the entire How to Pray series by Pastor Chris. If you've ever been challenged in your relationship with Christ in prayer, well, this is the series to get a hold of, listen to, and apply. Again, it's called How to Pray, and it's available in MP3 format on a thumb drive. Simply reach out to us for a gift of $15 or more and let us know of your interest. Again, 888-504-8805 or agradio.org. Leave us an email. And again, you can always write P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. Well, as promised, once again, here's Pastor Chris to give us a sneak peek at tomorrow's program here on Abounding Grace.
You ever thought the reason you're so frustrated with life and you feel backed up, pinned up against the sea with a variety of tyranny of circumstances is because God has backed you up into a place where he won't let you run, so that you face you and you face him? People in times of conflict run. They run the other way. They run to the past. They run back. They try to. God actually backs up his people so they can't run. What should you do? You can't fight? You're scared? God says, I want you right there. What does Moses do? Oh, this is so wonderful. Do not be afraid. Stand still. Stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians who you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you. Only hold your peace.
Tomorrow on Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris. Join us then.
Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday.
That's right, Chris, we would. And our worship services, because of the heat and earlier darkness, begin 9:30 for the morning service and 3 p.m. for the evening service. And both are held under the tent at Calvin Christian. Well, here's Pastor Chris once again. If you'd like to know more, with information on how to reach out to us,
you can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.